You've just come back from the Antarctic.
That's right.
From on board a Sea Shepherd ship.
That's right. That's right. I've just come back last week, so I've been home 8 days now, I think.
What's it like to be back?
Oh, it's nice. I'm gonna have to. It's nice to see all my friends and get somewhere that's a little bit warmer. I have to go back to work and back to normal life. So it's, I'm gonna miss it a little bit.
Could you tell me what the aim was of going out there in terms of the Sea Shepherd mission?
Sea Shepherd's mission to the Antarctic this year was to stop the Japanese whaling fleet from meeting their quota of about 1,000 whales and enforce the conservation laws that protect the Southern Ocean's Whale Sanctuary. The whaling fleet, all the ships there are marked up with the words research, but they belong to the Japanese Fisheries Agency and are taking about 935 minke whales and 50 fin whales, and they're also going to take 50 humpbacks, but that was cancelled at the last moment with some bargaining that was done by the United States. The humpbacks were particularly controversial with the Australian public because the humpbacks come past the Australian coast a lot and people go out whale watching and all the rest of it, so there was a lot of public opposition to the humpback part of the quota. Japan's been doing this research whaling ever since the moratorium on commercial whaling by the International Whaling Commission. Essentially, it's a loophole that's exploited by Japan to allow them to continually kill whales on a commercial basis. The whaling fleet consists of 7 ships, which is 3 harpoon vessels, 2 spotting vessels, Nishin Maru, which is a floating factory, and Oriental Bluebird, which is a resupply vessel. So, it's a major operation, it's a major industrial operation, it's not a small research mission. The Fisheries Agency have never published anything, any kind of scientific paper, or any information regarding whales that we didn't know already. Everything that they've, all the information they've gathered could easily be gathered with non-lethal methods. They're condemned by the British Antarctic Survey and the American Antarctic Survey, real researchers doing real research in Antarctica. So, the research is really just to try and legitimise the fleet.
So this is the main Japanese whaling fleet? It's like the
yeah.
fleet?
Japan also has this fleet, which is the pelagic, or ocean-going fleet. There is also some coastal whaling vessels that take whales off the coast of Japan, sort of within its 200-mile limit. The fleet also, the same fleet with Nishin Maru as the factory ship, also have a North Pacific whale hunt, which takes 500 or 600 whales a year as well. So they basically follow the migrations of the whales from Antarctica to the North Pacific, taking whales at each end. And Nishin Maru very rarely comes back to port. It sort of anchors out in the bay in Yokohama, its home port, and comes in for major repairs only. It's at sea most months of the year.
All the time.
Yeah. So, it's like I say, it's a major operation. Just to put a little bit of perspective on how much money they're making out of this, a fin whale, a large fin whale, is worth just under $1 million in terms of its meat and blubber. Minke whales are worth about $250,000. So it's a major industry in terms of the profits it's making. In the last 10 years or so, the price of whale meat and whale products has plummeted as the Japanese public become less interested in whale products. So it's an old generation thing. It's something that was introduced after the Second World War by the American Navy as a cheap way of feeding the starving Japanese public after the war. So it's not a cultural thing. It's not a long part of Japanese heritage. It's a very recent thing. So, and as the generation of the Second World War die out and the younger people aren't really taking it up, and the Fisheries Agency are constantly trying to introduce whale meat in different ways. They've tried to introduce it into the school diet at nurseries. They've tried to introduce it to burger bars, sort of fried whale burger meat, and they're constantly trying to find the new market for whale products, and so far being very unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. It's the reason why last year Iceland cancelled its whale hunt. They were going to catch 60 the 60 Minkies, and they cancelled that because of the low cost of whale meat. They decided it wasn't commercially viable. Most whale products, including Norway's whale catch, go to Japan. So, you know, the whale market, the market of whale meat dictates how many whales get caught around the world.
So you went out there. Could you tell us a little bit about what's been happening?
Yeah, I mean, this year's campaign was really quite epic. In 86 days, the Steve Irwin covered enough distance to go around the world once. you know, it was a major effort, and because of the large amounts of publicity, Sea Shepherd was able to get enough money together to refill the fuel tanks, which is the major expense, really. Carry out some repairs and go down for a third time. The previous crew had left for various reasons. A lot of people had run out of time, had jobs to go back to, families to go home to, and so a whole new crew was brought in for the third leg, which included myself. I wasn't there for the first two legs of the mission. And we went down to the Antarctic coast and harassed the whaling fleet and stopped them physically there in front of our eyes. We saw them not whale for 9 days. And the harassment that we scattered the fleet to the four winds, basically. And whilst the fleet scattered, they're unable to whale. So I don't know exactly how many days we were able to stop them, but, you know, it was a good sort of 10, 11 days of whaling.
And that's only the third leg?
No, it's just the third leg. The middle leg. The first leg was cut short by engine trouble, and the ship had to return to Melbourne for repairs. And I, to be honest, I wasn't following the campaign that closely at that point. The second leg was quite amazing, really. They again broke up the fleet for 3.5 weeks. It's pretty much sort of the whole time that they were down in Antarctica, they were harassing the whaling fleet. And the third leg, like I say, it was, I don't know, like 11 days or something. So, you know, in total, we stopped them for about 5 weeks.
And it said that they only have been able to meet about half their quota.
Yeah, I can't. The number is different depending on who you ask, but the fisheries agency, Japanese fisheries agency, said that they fell short of their quota by around 500 whales. So yeah, approximately half. And Japan attributed their failure to catch the quota on Sea Shepherd. They didn't mention any other reason. So it's, you know, it's a bit of a pat on the back for us. Yeah. And, you know, we're all very pleased to hear that they only made a half of their quota. It's still too many. One is too many. But, you know, it's a good use of time and a good use of resources to protect 500 whales. So yeah, it was a good campaign all in all.
Is it scary being out there?
I guess, I wasn't too scared very often. There were moments. You know, the sea gets quite rough out there, and looking over the side of the ship, you just see water. But the reality is, if you were to fall in without survival gear on there, you would be dead before the ship could pick you up. So falling over the side is pretty much a death sentence. A lot of the time, it's easy to not think about that and easy to kind of forget about that. But every now and again, you think, you know, especially at night time when it's dark. If you were to fall over when it was dark, that would be it. That would be the end. So, yeah, occasionally you kind of get reminded. And when the sea is really getting a bit violent and the wind is high, you just look out the porthole and you think, I don't even want to be on deck today, let alone in the water. Mm. So, yeah, there are times when you worry. And it's very remote and very isolated. Apart from the whaling ships, which are quite often very close to us, the nearest help is sort of 4 days or so. So, you know, you really are on your own. If the ship was to sink, you'd be in big trouble.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to get rescued by the whaling fleet too much. But
The Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, as it's known, they do a lot of other work as well, not
That's
just
right.
on the whaling issue. Could
That's
you
right,
explain
yeah.
a bit about that?
Yeah, Sea Shepherd's got three ships and numerous small vessels that patrol various areas. The Farley Moa, the flagship, is actually at the moment on its way up to Canada to protect the baby harp seals that the Canadian government is culling. They're culling about a third of the population, which is insane, being as the population is at less than 10% than it was sort of 30 years ago. So it's, you know, they're really trying to push the harp seals into extinction there. Sea Shepherd's got quite a long history with the harp seal. It was actually the first Sea Shepherd campaign back in 77, I think, you know, where they confronted the seal clubbers. Everyone's seen pictures of baby seals being clubbed. That's going on in a couple of weeks' time the coast of Newfoundland. So, yeah, Sea Shepherd's on the way there to do that now. That's the current campaign. That's the Farley Mowat. It's also been involved with drift netting and long lining. We had a little bit of activity against long lining whilst we were in the Antarctic. We happened to come across a Korean vessel that was pulling in a long line. Because it was already in the act of pulling in the line, there's not a lot we can actually physically do. But we were able to sort of note their positions and produce evidence which might lead to them losing their license. Sadly, they were a licensed vessel, but they were in breach of several conditions of their license. So, but it was all we could do, really. It was a little bit frustrating. I'd have liked to have caused them a lot more trouble than what we did. But at the end of the day, we've got to kind of loosely stick within the law and try and stay out there. They were pulling in Patagonian toothfish, which is an endangered species. It's sold as Chilean sea bass at restaurants and in supermarkets around the world. And it really is on the edge of extinction. One of the fish that we saw them pulling in is probably close to 100 years old. And we know very little about them. They're deep sea fish. So it's and the long lines themselves, they're evil things. You're talking about a sort of 30 to 60 mile long line with floats attached to it. And hundreds and hundreds of hooks that are baited for various different fish. The toothfish lines are on the bottom of the ocean, but as they get pulled up, they can kill albatross and various other birds. Leaving huge amounts of rope in the sea is never a good thing for wildlife, and bits of long line break off and stay out there forever. So, Sea Shepherd, whenever it finds a long line that isn't attached to a ship, pulls it in, and we confiscate it, and that's totally legal. Long lines are supposed to have bird scaring gear on them. They're supposed to have lights to warn ships. They're supposed to have radar transponders on them so you can see them on a radar. And they never really have these things. So they're illegal. So we have them. The ship is full of, coat hooks made out of long line hooks. And we've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles of long line that we use to tie things down. And it's everywhere, all over the ship. So it's kind of cool. That's one of the things that we do.
So the Sea Shepherd really focused on protecting wildlife in all its different forms.
Yeah. Sea Shepherd is basically a direct action conservation group that protects the marine environment, and has opinions on other things too, but doesn't really take action on anything that isn't related to the sea and marine environment. Our third ship, the Serenian, is on a long term lease to the Galapagos National Park, and actually has an Ecuadorian government law enforcement license, and that goes around protecting the no fishing zone around the Galapagos Islands, which are very ecologically important place in the world. And it arrests shark finning boats, it arrests longliners, and has been really effective out there. It's really been a great help for the park rangers, because they just don't have the funding to have a ship and run one. So Sea Shepherd runs it, the park rangers staff it, and the Ecuadorian Navy gives it law enforcement. So it's a really good thing. But I think we're into our seventh year of that, and we've got another 5-year contract with that. So it's I'd love to work on a Serenian one day. It's a bit warmer.
Why did you decide to join Sea Shepherd more than, let's say, Greenpeace, who, of course, take action on the whaling issue as well?
Yeah, I kind of come from a direct action background. I'm not really interested in lobbying and sort of protesting or anything like that. I want to physically stop whaling there and then on that day and save that whale that's being targeted by that harpoon vessel. In the long term, the battle will really be won in Japan and sort of by the pressure of public opinion. So Sea Shepherd does quite well at sort of pushing that angle of things. Our confrontations at sea make the news. They get people talking about it. The last two campaigns in particular have been very successful on that front. But for me, I recognise the importance of that personally, but for me it's more important to actually physically stop those ships at what they're doing there and then on the day. I don't want to badmouth Greenpeace or any other group that's taking action. Anybody who's in the Southern Oceans protecting whales is doing a good thing. But personally, I find it more agreeable to take Sea Shepherd's method, which is, the line that we draw is causing injury. So, quite happy to damage property, quite happy to interfere with their operations, quite happy to put ourselves at risk. Whereas I think Greenpeace tried to make more of a media stunt of things, tried to get the world's attention through the media. So, they draw the line at damaging property and what have you. So I'm not really into that. That's up to them.
if people want to get involved, support Sea Shepherd's work, what sort of the things they could do?
Sea Shepherd's very international. There's support groups in various countries. If you were to go to seashepherd.org, go to the website and find out, you know, where the nearest group is. In the UK, we've got quite a good group of supporters who are involved in sort of doing demonstrations. Like, for example, we had a demonstration at the Japanese embassy whilst I was in the Southern Oceans. There were people here in the UK at the embassy, and they sort of lowered the flag to half mast and caused a bit of a stunt there. But the main thing really is raising funds and getting donations of money and equipment for the ships, because most of our activities are out there at sea. So, you know, you can get involved in the UK just by emailing uk@seashepherd.org. And there's so many different jobs to do. I mean, from ringing up companies and trying to get them to give us money and equipment to sort of helping crew a table at various events up and down the country. You know, there's lots of different ways of getting involved.
When will you be going out again?
I don't know, I'll have to see how work goes and what have you. I'd like to be out there for the next Antarctic campaign. I'd like to do something different. I'd like to go to a different part of the world. I think, you know, I'd like to have managed to go to the SEAL campaign this year, but sadly, I've got to come home and do my thing. So yeah, maybe just in a few months I'll be back back on the ship.
Okay, well, I think that's pretty much it. Okay. Have you got anything else to say to people who might be listening to this? I don't know. Why should they care? Why should they get involved, you know?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, we've got to remember that whilst you're at home on land, far away from the sea, that the Earth is two-thirds water, and that most life on Earth does live in the water, and that that's easily forgotten whilst you live in somewhere like Nottingham, about as far away from the sea as you can get. So really, you know, we have so many ecological problems on land, and they're all incredibly important. But what's often forgotten is the damage to the ecosystems and the species and wildlife that live in the sea, because they're unseen. You know, they're below beneath the waves. No one knows much about what's going on with them. And really, we need to remember that and make a bit more of an effort for our ocean dwelling friends. You know, because at the end of the day, you go to any supermarket, the shelves are stacked with seafood, the freezers are full of seafood. Millions of tons of fish pulled out of the sea on a daily basis, and the world's fisheries are in collapse, and we really are on the brink of having a very sterile ocean, and the consequences of that for our planet are quite far reaching. And I for one, I don't want to live in a planet that's got a dead ocean. And it's not just about whales, it's about plankton, it's about sardines, cod, tuna, dolphins, you know, all the different sea life. And so, you know, so protecting the oceans is as important as protecting the forests and protecting the meadows and all the rest of it that people take a lot of time in protecting. So, you know, folks should remember that and put a bit of effort in for the sea.